to The Freedom Message. Stephen Vincent. PBSRadio.com. Our voices. Let freedom ring. The Freedom Message by Scott Mitchell. Shout that message loud and clear. The Ron Paul Revolution is here. Undeniable. RonPaul2008.com. Check it out. The donations are pouring in. We have blown past the half million mark, the half million goal set by the campaign, currently at $751,718.79. Thank you, Mika Williams of Leander, Texas. Every few seconds, a new donation hits. Zephram Campbell, thank you. San Carlos, California. The donations are pouring in. We are on our way to raising $1 million in 6 days. It's a lock. Everyone, please, if you haven't already contributed, or even if you have, thank you, Bruce Smith of Sherwood, Minnesota. Every few seconds, it updates. Dominic Morisky of Garwood, New Jersey, thank you very much for supporting the Ron Paul Revolution. RonPaul2008.com. Send in your donation. Help us to reach that goal of $1 million before the end of the quarter. That's midnight on Sunday. So, yesterday, as you know, there was another debate. PBS Tavis Smiley debate, and I found it interesting, and I didn't find it to be Dr. Paul's best performance in a debate. I had higher hopes for what might come out of it. I think that there was some potential there that he didn't quite tap into. I kind of got a sense that he wasn't feeling his best yesterday. That's just my feeling. After listening to the debate once, and not even the entire thing, but we'll play some of it and we'll talk some of it. I have some feelings and thoughts about the whole issues of race and color and the way the debate was framed and presented. To me, it felt a little bit funny. I'm not really sure why in 2007, and we're not in 1957 anymore, we're just not in 1957 anymore, things are different, and why we continue to need to frame things in this racialist way so that we have to have a black American debate. It just doesn't make sense to me. Aren't we yet at the point where we're just individuals and we're just Americans? Why do we need the hyphens? Why do we continue to cling to this differentiation of African American, Hispanic American, Caucasian American, Italian American, whatever dash American? It just doesn't feel right at this day and age. It sounds like some people to me are just holding on to an agenda from the past that's been passed down, and that there are some special interests who just want to continue to perpetuate their little niche of power. And I'm referring to the African American community and to any other community that bases its power, its political power, on its racial identity. I feel that it's just really time to stop it and to be American, to be an individual, just to look beyond. If we want to have a racially accepting society, if we want to have a racialism-free society, then we need to stop looking at ourselves in terms of our race. So I don't particularly consider myself to be white. I don't consider my race, and I don't consider other people's races when I'm dealing with them. I consider them by the content of their character. And to pose, to me, just didn't seem right. I was happy about the PBS. I heard about, it's going to be on PBS. And I thought, okay, that's good. They'll public television, and they'll probably have a fairer, more balanced approach to the organization and the presentation of the debate, which in fact they did. And I thought, well, that's a good thing. And I thought, Tavis Smiley, what I know of him, he sounds like an all right guy. I can't say I'm an authority on Tavis Smiley, but the times that I've heard him, he's had intelligent and thoughtful, insightful things to say. And I thought, well, that's okay too. But I had no idea that it was going to be framed in this. This is the African-American debate. I guess I just wasn't prepared for that, and it kind of just felt wrong to me. It just didn't feel right for the times. We're not in 1957 anymore. And, I just am not sure why. If people want to talk about this and they have ideas and thoughts about this, I'd really love to get a call about this, because I just have questions. I'm not saying I have the answers. I just say I have questions. 877-270-8714. 877-270-8714. We're now, this thing updates every couple of seconds. And I'm not kidding you. If you haven't had a look at this, this is history in the making. It's absolutely phenomenal. RonPaul2008.com. $752,988. And I can't even get it out of my mouth before it updates again. $752,998.79. Gregory Perry of Tampa, Florida, thank you. Sarah Pinnell, Calypso, Montana, thank you very much for your support of the Ron Paul Revolution. You can see it happening in, literally, graphically. Thank you, Daniel Watson of Nellisford, Virginia. You can see it happening in, literally, graphically, in front of your eyes. If somebody out there can get a video camera, point it at their screen and videotape this from now until we hit that 1 million, until the end of, until Sunday at midnight, videotape this. This is history. Get it on video, and then we'll do like a sped up, fast forward rendering of the video, and it will make some fascinating, undeniable view. We are seeing the undeniable proof of the support of Dr. Ron Paul for president. Now, after this, there will be no ability for the disclaimers to say that this campaign is not first tier and for real. They are going to be confronted with the fact of the existence of the Ron Paul Revolution, the persistence of the Ron Paul Revolution, the growth of the Ron Paul Revolution. Raise your voices loud and clear. The Ron Paul Revolution is here. Freedom! So as I was saying about, thank you, Eric Cruz, Monrovia, California. It just keeps going. Deborah DeHart, Stevens, Pennsylvania. It just keeps going. As I was saying about the debate. So, I just have these questions about that. And I didn't feel that we're going to listen to these clips, and then we're going to see. We'll go through it. My feeling was that Dr. Paul had a lot more to say to the situation than he brought forth in that debate. And you know what? Hey, you can't hit a home run every time you go up to bat. And let's face it, Dr. Paul's been on a heck of a hitting streak. Every single debate, he's been knocking the cover off the ball and hitting them out of the park every single time. So, I'm certainly prepared to, cut him some slack on this one, and not that it was a terrible performance. I just felt like he didn't really, hit the nail on the head where the way he tends to in the situation. And, But you know what I'm saying? It wasn't an optimum situation. So let's go ahead and listen right now to the intro. I found the intro to this whole thing really fascinating, and we'll just listen to a little bit of that right now.
Fortunately, there are those in the Republican Party who do understand the importance of reaching out to people of color. I am grateful to former RNC Chairman Ken Mailman, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, former Congressman Jack Kemp, and former Maryland Lieutenant Governor Michael Steele, all of whom have lent their support over the last year to this event. Indeed, last week, President Bush was asked about those GOP candidates not attending tonight and responded by underscoring the importance of reaching out to communities of color. We believe that when we make communities of color better, we make our country better. And so, enough said about the no-shows. Here now to introduce the candidates who are here, please welcome former Maryland Lieutenant Governor and current chairman of GOPAC, Michael Steele.
Thank you. Thank you. This evening. Good evening and welcome to the campus of Morgan State University for this American Presidential Forum on PBS.
Okay, I'm trying to find the presidential intro ideals of America to the candidates.
Together, but since that time, the Republican Party and the Blacks will never
see. I had that
very
up.
Often, both have missed genuine opportunities to communicate and reach out to each other. Republicans welcome the Republican candidates for president.
Here we go.
Once again, we have an opportunity to change the course of a nation. So I am proud to introduce to you former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee. Texas Congressman Ron Paul. Kansas Senator Sam Brownback.
So by far the most
Tom Tancredo.
Enthusiastic greeting was for Dr. Paul.
California Congressman Duncan Hunter. And former Ambassador Alan Keyes. Nice to see you.
So, by far the most enthusiastic greeting was for Dr. Paul, and that was interesting. And I looked at the video, and I saw that the audience was, in fact, very mixed, very diverse audience, 50-50, people of color and people of non-color, I guess is what we are, it was a diverse audience, apparently there was organized support for Dr. Paul there. I don't know, for sure. I hadn't heard from anybody that there was organized support, but then again, where isn't there organized support for Dr. Paul? Everywhere he goes, there's organized support at every whistle stop he makes. It's like the Beatles have just landed from Britain. There's thousands of screaming fans everywhere he goes. So, of course, there was organized support for Dr. Paul. So let's go ahead and listen to a little bit of this debate stuff, and we'll talk about it a little bit. And what we have here is everything separated out into little chunks of when Ron Paul had his opportunities to speak. So let's listen to the first one now.
And I'm very pleased because I go wherever I'm invited to talk about freedom. That to me is the most important thing, along with the emphasis on the Constitution. I believe so strongly that individuals have their rights and their life as a gift from God, and the purpose of government is to protect life and liberty. But I'd also like to extend that if you have the fruits of your labor, I would like you to keep the fruits of your labor as well. And under those conditions and under a freedom philosophy and under the Constitution, we would be so much more prosperous because we wouldn't be policing the world. We would be bringing our troops home, and we would take care of our people here at home.
Thank you, Congressman. Okay, so that was in response to the question of how the candidates feel about being invited to speak in this environment. So I kind of was looking for the answer that he usually gives in these circumstances, which is, well, you know, we're all individuals, and I'm here to speak to individuals, not to a group. To me, that was the key message that I think didn't quite come out. And I know everyone, you know, I'm not trashing Dr. Paul. I'm not attacking him. I mean, none of that. Okay. I'm just simply commenting. I just felt as though maybe somehow this might have been one of those situations where there could have been, I know one of the great things about Dr. Paul is he's very unrehearsed. He doesn't give canned answers for the most part. You know, he's obviously not been prepped for these things much. You know, he's not handled. And that makes him extremely credible and appealing. But this might have been one situation where he might have done better if there had been more preparation, perhaps. Now, on the other hand, you know what? This guy is being run ragged all over the country. So, you know, where's the chance? Where's the opportunity? So, I understand that we have Mark on the line, so we're going to go ahead and we're going to talk to Mark.
Hey, Mark, are you there?
Yeah.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for calling into the Freedom Message. How are you today?
Good. It's Mark Warzeka, actually.
What's that again?
This is Mark Warzeka.
Okay. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. So tell me, what did you call in about today?
Oh, I wanted to call in just talk about the debates and how Dr. Paul did last night.
Okay, great. It's a good topic to discuss, and it's certainly something that's on my mind. What were your impressions and thoughts and feelings?
Well, I thought Dr. Paul did really well, but I just want to say how refreshing I thought the debate was last night. I actually really enjoyed having the quote unquote front runners out of this debate and having a smaller group and getting to hear some more from some of the candidates that we don't get to hear as much from when the quote unquote big three or big four are there. We get to hear a lot more from these from the other candidates and a lot more from Dr. Paul than we usually get to hear, and I think he represented himself very well.
You're right. It is refreshing, and we had the same experience. Sort of ironically, the two experiences that we had were, the Christian conservative, essentially white, kind of middle America Christian conservative debate, the values voter debate, where the big guys, so-called, were not there, and then in this case, the African American, more liberal, more Democrat-oriented debate, where they were not present as well, and they were both definitely more interesting experiences in general than we generally get.
Yes, and I know there's some chatter about Dr. Paul, sort of coming off as unrehearsed in some of these debates. At least to me, it reads, I enjoy that. I can see that, but I enjoy it. I think he comes off as being very earnest and honest, and that
yes.
He is speaking in the
sorry.
Moment
from
the heart.
I just had a moment of enlightenment. This is Mark Warzeka from the show that I did on...
From No Waiting Show, yes.
Yes, the No Waiting Show. Folks, I'll let folks in on this. I was on this live stage show. It's basically a Bill Maher kind of politically incorrect style show, a live stage show, and it was in Hollywood on, I believe it was Tuesday night, was that right? And had a great time on Mark's show. It was a lot of fun. And I think that we had a really good response to the Ron Paul Freedom Message on the part of the people in the audience. And I YouTubed it. It is up on my website, ronpaulfreedommessage.com, ronpaulfreedommessage.com, if you want to go and check out that online, folks. So go ahead, Mark. What were you saying about the debate? You were just making a point.
Oh, you know, no, I'd like to say in regards to this show, your passion and your enthusiasm certainly comes through here on the Ron Paul Freedom Message, and even more so in person. And I think you did a great job live on stage for our live audience at the show the other night, bringing the Ron Paul Freedom Message to them, and sort of, opening a lot of people's minds up to what it is Ron Paul and you guys are doing. But you know, I was just saying that I think that Ron Paul came through very, I think that he does come off as being unrehearsed, but I don't think that's necessarily in a negative way, because I think that he comes off as being earnest and honest, and that he's speaking in the moment from the heart, and everybody else, you know, is so polished, both in the Republican and Democratic debate, that it's refreshing.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. But I think when you go into a situation like this, and when it has all this specificity to it, you know, it's very. This is a very specific thing. This is like the Black American debate. You know, and there you know the specific issues that are going to be thrown at you. It seems like he could have benefited. And, you know, this is me just talking off the top of my head and off of an impression. It's not like I've studied all this, the footage, or listened to it all in depth. And we'll listen to a little bit more of it. But, you know, I just felt like, you know, he has given better responses to the questions that were asked elsewhere under other circumstances. And somehow he didn't quite nail it the way he normally does. That's just maybe my impression. Maybe that's just where my head was at in listening to it and watching it. And you might be totally right that he knocked the cover off the ball. You know, but anyway, it's worth talking about. Now, you know, little things like you know, he said he used the term frequently. Well, blacks this and blacks. You know, and it's just a little bit off for where you need to be today, I think, when you're talking on an issue of race. You know, I think that, you know, Black Americans or, you know, African Americans or Black people might have been a better, you know, kind of phraseology. He could have been prepared better, I think, by the campaign. With that kind of thing, you know.
I understand. You know, I have to say, I thought that all of these, all of the candidates last night, perhaps with the exception of Alan Keyes, came off a little bit unconnected to the African American audience at times. I think they each had moments like that where it felt like there was a bit of a disconnect, and
right.
I understand what you're saying. I agree with what you're saying, but you know, I think that some of the other candidates were sort of even more egregious in that
right.
sense.
For sure.
Duncan Hunter not knowing or pretending to not know about the Gina Six was really remarkable, considering the audience that he was coming to debate in front of and how huge that issue is. I thought he. That was a huge mistake on his part there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. You know, I would say in comparison to the way some of the other candidates came off, I think that Dr. Paul certainly did do well. And, you know, I think that, I guess I had a certain thing that I was looking for. Because I think it comes off of what happened in the values voter debate, and what I liked about what he did in the values voter debate was he didn't pander at all. He could have gone into that values voter debate and told them things that they wanted to hear. Instead, he stood on the Constitution, and he said, for example, on the abortion issue, okay, he personally does not believe in abortion and believes that abortion is wrong, but he also knows that we need to have the rule of law and the respect for the Constitution, and that decision is constitutionally left to states and local communities to decide, regardless of what his personal opinion was. And he stood on that. And I thought that the issue in this here, and he talks about this often, and I think, again, I don't think he actually brought this up, what I was looking for, he talks about this often, which is we are not groups which have certain, you know, privileges or special considerations. We are individuals. We are, you know, individual human beings, not groups. Rights, as he says frequently, rights do not belong to groups. They belong to individuals. And the whole problem that I have with the scenario of the debate itself was we are this racially identified group, and we have our rights and sort of privileges or whatever special considerations that accrue to us by virtue of, you know, this designation as a special group, you know. And I think that's a large part of what Dr. Paul is trying to get us to move away from, is all these special interests that are formed around special groups, you know, whatever it might be, you know. And it ranges the gamut all the way from the conservative to the liberal. And every demographic and every political, you know, concern that you can think of. And to get back to the recognition of the importance and the centrality of the individual, I guess I was looking for that and I didn't feel like it came across, and I came away feeling a little bit, sort of frustrated with that. Now, I may have missed it. It might actually be in there, and I didn't quite get it. Now, did you get any of that?
I did not feel that coming through clearly either. Do you think that it's possible that Dr. Paul deliberately didn't make that same point that he had made at the Values Voters debate in order to pander a little bit to this audience last night?
Well, I think that anybody in that situation is going to feel somewhat intimidated because of the way the liberal mindset has set us up for self-censorship, where, you know, you have to be really careful about what you say because you might offend somebody, and there's this whole politically correct thing, and I think it affects everybody. Everybody, where you have, you know, the politically correct thing, where you self-censor, you know, yourself, and you don't say what you think or feel because you don't want to offend anybody or be viewed as racist or be viewed as sexist or be viewed as homophobic or be viewed as anything else. And, you know, we have our personal beliefs about what we believe is right and proper to say, and my personal beliefs don't allow me to think, feel, or say things that are pejorative based on somebody's, you know, racial background, their sexual orientation, or their gender, or whatever. You know, that's how I think, feel, and act. But it's different when it's your personal opinion and when it's sort of become this imposed thing that suppresses freedom of speech. That is the politically correct, you know, thing. You know, and I think anybody in that situation would be feeling that kind of weight of political correctness, and you might start to self-censor yourself as possible.
Part of that, I think that point that you're making about political correctness is probably part of the reason why four of the Republican candidates didn't show up last night. I mean, Tavis Smiley said something at the beginning of the intro of the debate, and I'm paraphrasing him, but something like the campaigns of the four candidates who didn't show up had said publicly that, you know, they were worried that the audience would not be open to them being there, or that the audience might be hostile towards them. And I think that they weighed the what they perceived as the pros and cons of showing up, and felt like this particular segment of the population is probably not going to vote for them anyway, and they fear that some clip is going to be taken from this debate and make the rounds through the media and on the internet of them accidentally saying the wrong thing and being booed or heckled by the audience.
Sure. Which was almost guaranteed to happen for a lot of those guys. And I think actually maybe that's what it is. You touched on what I think might have been my letdown in a sense. Not so much a disappointment, but so letdown in the sense that What I was excited about when I found out, oh, this is an African-American thing, I was excited about because what I've seen in just, you know, my life and in my work, you know, in the campaign and just what I've, the vibe I'm getting is, in fact, large numbers of African-Americans are actually turning on to Ron Paul. Now, the precise reason for it, I don't claim to understand or have a real handle on, but that actually is very exciting and very interesting. And I was like, ooh, maybe tonight's the night that he could really make a breakout in the African-American community, and wouldn't that be a big, you know, a big plus for the campaign? And I guess I was sort of looking for that, and I got, maybe it did happen, and I'm not getting it. You know what I'm saying? But, Mark, let's do this. Let me go ahead and try to play another clip. Now, we just switched over to a new audio production system here, and we don't have the telephone integrated into it yet. So I think that, and I hope that the listening there at bbsradio.com, I think that you will be able to hear the clip on the phone as I play it, though I could be wrong about that. But I am going to go ahead and try it. Play another clip here, and hopefully you'll be able to hear it, and then we'll chat about it. Okay, so I'm going to put my phone down and play the clip, and hopefully you'll be able to hear it. Okay, here it goes.
Laws on drugs and the unfairness on how blacks are treated with these drug laws, it would be a tremendous improvement. And also, I think that if you're going to have prosperity, it serves everybody. And if this is done by emphasizing property rights and freedom of the individuals, making sure that the powerful special interests don't control Washington, that the military-industrial complex doesn't suck away all the wealth of the country, and then we would have prosperity. This is what we need, and we need to share it. The free society is the only society that can provide goods and services and distribute them in the most fair manner. And that is the society that I would advocate and argue for and believe it's available to us.
Thank you, sir. Senator Brownback.
Okay, we're back. You with me, Mark?
We're back. Unfortunately, I couldn't hear the clip.
Oh, okay. We're kind of making it up as we go along here, as we so often do in the Ron Paul Revolution. Just making it up as we go along here. I wasn't sure if that was going to work, but we gave it a go. Okay. So we'll have to try that another time when we get this all the bugs worked out of this new system here, which should be very soon. In any case, that was another clip from Ron Paul, and it actually kind of illustrated some of the points that I was speaking. You know, it was earlier on in the debate, and I think he was just kind of like sort of getting his feet on the ground, and then later on, I felt like he kind of found his, you know, his feet on the floor, and I think he really hit stride with the discussion on the war on drugs. Mm-hmm. And I remember being around, I worked in a social service type of a setting back in the early days of the war on drugs. It was a primarily Hispanic but somewhat African-American community in Boston. And a lot of people were very in favor, you know, of the war on drugs because drugs were just destroying the community. You know, it was really horrible. And this is in the days of where the drive-by shooting became a daily event and all of that, and the crack cocaine. So people, there was kind of like a split. Some people were like, yeah, we need the police in here. Why aren't they doing anything? We need more police. Build another police station. Put up those cameras in the public places so that they can surveil these drug dealers and bust them. You know, whatever you've got to do, do it. We got to stop these people, you know, or, you know. community watch and drop a dime and all of this stuff. And then there were other people that felt like the war on drugs was, you know, kind of worse than the solution. And it was criminalizing the Hispanic and African American populations and discriminating against them. And you had this real divide in the community over that. And I don't know what the thermometer is on that in urban settings at this point, whether people have finally got the message that the war on drugs is, you know, far worse than the drugs themselves, and that perhaps if, as Ron Paul, I believe he indicated in the debate, if I'm not mistaken, that, you know, why, oh, yes, he did, as a matter of fact, that drugs ought to be legalized or decriminalized. And that would be the solution to the whole drug issue, not further police enforcement and wasting another $40 billion or whatever it is that we've spent on the war on drugs. I think he did hit a home run on that one.
Well, the audience live really agreed with his point there. I think you're right. I think he did hit a home run there, and he made his point well and clearly, and yes, it seemed from the reaction last night that the large amount of that particular audience have come around on the war on drugs and definitely agreed with his point. And I was surprised that to hear Mike Huckabee make a similar point, not something I would have expected from him. He didn't. He sort of was a little more restrained in his answer, but also thought that that there should be our prisons should be for violent offenders and not for drug users, and that got a good reaction from the crowd too. Maybe the country as a whole is coming around more than we realize in terms of the failed war on drugs, and are finally starting to see that all this tough talk about go out and grab them and throw them all in jail that we've been hearing for decades really hasn't amounted to any success. And also I think the idea of rehabilitation just in general it as opposed to prison time has permeated the culture a little more and resonates with a lot more Americans than it used to. Whether
Absolutely.
That's done through the government or individually, but that rehabilitation is the right way to go.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And I think you may be right. I mean, you may be right that, it's been, 20 years of this war on drugs, and what do we got? More drugs, you know? What do we got? More prisons,
right.
More crime, you know? Obviously, you know, any time the government has a war on something, it only makes it worse. We had a war on poverty, more poverty. We had a war on illiteracy we've been dumbed down to the point of, just ridiculousness at this point. And I think that the same is going to be held true of the war on terrorism, you know. So the war on terrorism is doing what? It's creating more terrorism. So that's the situation that we got right now. And I think that a little bit later on in the debate, there was the issue of Darfur that came up. And if I'm not mistaken, and he did, I think that there was the opportunity certainly to pander there and say that, yeah, we're going to intervene in Darfur and save the day there. And in fact, he stuck to his non-interventionist policy. Now, I'm wondering, is the Darfur issue a hot button issue in the African American community? If I understand the situation correctly, you've got Arab Sudanese killing African Sudanese. Is that the correct situation that's happening there? The genocide?
I believe so, and I would assume that it is a big issue in the African American community.
Yeah, and if I read the response there, I didn't seem to be a negative response to his call for non-intervention in the situation. And it's worth pointing out that in every single case where quote-unquote humanitarian intervention has occurred, there's been rampant corruption, and most of it centered around the United Nations. whenever we're part of this, these United Nations peacekeeping or humanitarian efforts, all that ends up happening is the country in question is turned into a virtual United Nations protectorate, and it loses its sovereignty, and the internal situation of the country simply does not improve. There aren't any examples where it's really, you know, solved the situation. So the idea, the notion that somehow we and or other countries together in some combination have the right or the obligation to interfere in the affairs of other countries, I think is really has had its day and has been disproven just by simple sheer experience. That you know is something that we need to move on from. So
yeah, I think that Dr. Paul's consistency came through last night on the sort of non-interference issue, because you know he is consistent about America not meddling in the affairs of other nations, even if it's even if it's the Sudan and talking about Darfur, and because it's not just that issue alone that he said don't interfere in, but in each of these issues that come up, where we're talking about U.S. Intervention in other countries, he's always consistent on that point. And so I think that was a moment where it's clear that he wasn't going to, he's not going to pander. He does stick to his guns, and even though maybe everyone in the audience didn't agree with his position on it, I think they'd have to at least give him points for earnestness and consistency.
Mm-hmm. And he provokes people to think out of the box, because we are so mm-hmm. trapped in these sort of very established parameters. You know, you can think this over here on the left, and you can think that over there on the right. These
right.
are your choices. And don't think that there are any other options or other ways of viewing this. You know, these are your choices. They are have been assigned for you. You get that reinforced by you every time you watch the mainstream media, and that's just the way it is. And he just doesn't play that, you know, and that's people have a hard time sort of pinning the tail on the Ron Paul. You know, there's just, you know, he's very difficult to identify in the established framework that we've been given, and you know, God bless him for that. Some people end up scratching their heads and saying, oh, "I just never heard that before. Is this You know, I can't say I disagree with it, but I don't know what to make out of that." You know, so many times when he speaks, and I think that's great. It's really shaking up the consciousness of people. So, do you happen to be by your computer now, Mark?
I am.
Can you do me a favor? Go to ronpaul2008.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's the campaign website, and you're going to see this widget that they have installed on the site. Now, they've been, I believe it was Monday at noon, they launched a campaign to raise $500,000 by the end of the quarter, which is this Sunday at midnight. They have now raised $759,081.76, with still 2 days, 4 hours, 42 minutes, and 4 seconds remaining till the end of the quarter. And if you look at this, it updates in real time, dynamically, as a contribution is made. And the name Jessica McCrindle, Limor, California, Ali Hajimiri, Pasadena, California. Thank you, Ali. Susan Spencer, Louisville, Kentucky. Thank you, Susan. Updates every couple of seconds in real time. Michael Cantor of Houston, Texas, now at $759,131.76. And the contributions just are pouring in, sometimes two or three times a minute. You'll get a new contribution coming in. It's absolutely fascinating. Thank you, James Marcella of Roswell, New Mexico. It's just a graphical representation in real time of the growth of this this campaign of the Ron Paul Revolution and the true, real, actual support of the American people for it. Donald Pickerel of Fayetteville, North Carolina, thank you very much for your support of the Ron Paul Revolution. Jeff McNeil of West Jordan, Utah. So this is, I mean, I can barely get the names out of my mouth before it updates with another one. It's just fascinating.
Yeah, I have it up here too. Yeah, this is, it's really pretty cool. When did this fundraising begin?
On Monday.
This particular fundraiser.
This went up Monday at noon. And
Monday at noon.
Yeah, and the goal was $500,000. Now we're on our way to $1 million. We're actually on a pace. I did some math, and we're on a pace to $1.25 million. We're doing about $8,500 an hour, or something like that. There was a few hours that I calculated we did like $13,000 or $14,000 in an hour. There it goes again. Thank you, Dustin Perro of Lansing, Michigan. So, folks, if you're listening out there, go ahead and do this. It's fun, and you get to see your name up in lights for a couple of minutes. So, and it's just really fascinating and fun, and I hope that they keep this. And I think that when they announce this quarter's number, it's going to blow people's minds, and I think that this little exercise here in and of itself is news. You're watching news right now happening on your screen with this. This is really something. And
Steve, I'm curious because I know you certainly know more about this than I would. How does Ron Paul stack up in comparison to the other candidates, Republican and Democrat, in terms of internet fundraising? I'm assuming he's somewhere near the head of the pack.
I think he's blowing everybody away. Good point. I read an article. Thank you, Stuart Bjorge of Hillsboro, Oregon. I think it's Huckabee who's doing the same, and he's raised about $250,000 in 2 weeks doing almost the same thing. Thank you, Darren Gudenschwager of Universal City, Nebraska. And by the way, folks, I'm missing some of the names because I'm not fast enough to read them all. This is how fast it's updating. This is how fast the contributions are pouring in. Actually, in yesterday's show, I said, you know, I'm going to challenge. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do this on Josh Ziegel of Franklin, Tennessee. Thank you so much for your contribution to the Ron Paul campaign. Jeffrey Acton of Kansas City, Missouri. Thank you very much. I'm going to do this live on the air on Monday. This is going to be fun because you've got to have fun, right, Mark?
Yes.
I'm going to call. Should I call a Giuliani campaign? See, I really have a thing. Let me do both Giuliani and Thompson. I'm going to call the Giuliani and Thompson campaign. I'm going to say, my name is Michael Warchka, and I'm a supporter of Rudy Giuliani. And you know what? The Ron Paul folks, they did this thing with online fundraising, and why don't we do the same? Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. And I want to see how they dance and step around why they won't do it. Because they won't do it. They won't do it. They won't do it because they know they won't get a damn penny. You know? They won't get anything that even approaches what Ron Paul is getting. And I'm going to put that idea out in front of them, and I'm going to record it. Okay? Maybe I'll just do it live on the air. And thank you, Michael Shuley of Albany, New York. And we're now at $760,206.76. Eric Pavone of Morrisville, New York. Thank you very much. I think that'd be fun because you know what? Thank you, Mark Simpson of Manchester, New Hampshire. I don't think that they would do very well at all. You know, when these other candidates appear anywhere, the only time that they have people around them that are not entourage is when they paid people to be there, paid supporters. You know, there have been numerous instances recently where Giuliani, for example, thank you, Daniel Douglas of Honolulu, Hawaii. Thank you, Travis Sarver of Mesa, Arizona. He was on the ferry coming back from Mackinac Island in Lake Michigan, and he was trapped.
Yes, I've been to Mackinac Island. I grew up in Michigan.
He was trapped on the ferry with 200 Ron Paul supporters. Yes. There's a YouTube
video. And what happened to him?
And they were just, Ron Paul, Ron Paul, Ron Paul. He had nobody. Nobody. He had his bodyguards. Thank you, Chris Summers of Livermore, California.
Did he try to collect even $9.11?
He was alone and surrounded by Ron Paul supporters. And when it comes to Fred Thompson and Rudy Giuliani, in my opinion, the gloves are off. Go ahead. Have some fun. Now, when it comes to Rudy Giuliani, what I need to have happen the next time he appears in public, and I hope someone out there is hearing this, who can put this into action, and if anybody knows he's coming to Los Angeles, please let me know so I can organize this with some advance notice so I can put a crew together. We need to find him. We need to surround him. We need to point our fingers at him and laugh derisively. Now, you wanna know? Yes, we need to laugh at him in public while cameras are filming him. Thank you, Matthew Begman of Columbia, Missouri. While cameras are filming him, you know, for his appearance, you know, of whatever he's doing, we need to point our fingers at him and chuckle and giggle and laugh. Because if I remember correctly, Mr. Giuliani was chuckling and laughing and giggling like a schoolgirl when Dr. Paul was being asked questions and answering questions during the last debate that Giuliani bothered to show up at, I believe the New Hampshire debate. So I think that Mr. Giuliani needs to be held up for ridicule. Mark, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
My question is this. Wouldn't it seem that if there were a candidate who has thrice appeared in public in drag as a transvestite, and this person were proposing themselves for the presidency of the United States, and the Republican, and as a Republican candidate, wouldn't it seem that that would be somewhat newsworthy, and wouldn't it seem that that might, to some degree, call the validity of their candidacy into question?
Well, yes, and I do think, I am surprised that that hasn't been brought up more. I do think that we're going to hear about it, as the primaries draw near. We'll hear about it. Someone will put it together, a YouTube video of Giuliani of all his times in drag, or
it's
someone
already
will buy some 30-second ads. I think we'll see it and hear about it. But he has been, you know what is starting to seep through is his general weirdness is starting to seep through. You know what came through in the media, you know, this week was these phone calls that he's taken from his wife during the middle of speeches everywhere. So the idea of Giuliani's sort of weirdness, I think, is coming through a little bit.
Let's hope so. But you know what it proves to me? The fact that it hasn't been an issue and brought up or talked about by the media proves that he is the anointed one, or one of the anointed ones, that he has been hand-picked and hand-chosen by the Council on Foreign Relations, by the people that own the media, and therefore, since he is a chosen one, he has been given this pass. He has been given this pass, even on something as questionable, and I'm using that as a very light kind of, you know, it really should be egregious, you know, matter of his serious character flaw, okay. And, you know, the fact that he's been given this pass is proof of the fact that he has just been, his only qualification is that he has been a hand-picked lackey hack for the establishment. That's what it is. But next time he shows up, you know, I think some posters, you know, I think folks, you know, if you could do this, you know, I think maybe get one of these YouTube videos, find a nice frame, and they take a picture of the frame, a nice high-resolution photograph, then Photoshop it, and maybe like something like, big blow-up poster, something that says, vote for Rudy Giuliani, you know, and have lots of these posters and just surround him with the posters during his next press conference. Vote for Trudy Giuliani. Trudy Giuliani, okay, with the big picture of him, and then, you know, and then point your finger and laugh and giggle.
You know, appearing once in drag for comedic purposes on Saturday Night Live or whatever, which he did. I could see that, but several times does seem like it might be a bit of a fetish.
Yeah, I mean, it's just to me, you know, I'd like to be very liberal and very, you know, open and say, oh, whatever, you know. But, you know, if it's you, Mark, hey, bro, go for it. If you like it, if it's your thing,
well, thank you. Thank
whatever.
You.
Hey, I'm not going to hold it against you. However, I am going to hold it against somebody who's running for president of the United States because I need that person to be of the highest character, and I don't want to have any doubts, you know. I don't want to have any, well, maybe there's something wrong there. You know what I'm saying? I need somebody like Ron Paul, okay? Somebody that I can really believe in and be really sure about his character, you know? I don't need somebody that I'm going to feel like, oh, I don't know, you know, I mean, if it's, you know, just a certain, you know, a person in private life, okay, that's all right, but, you know, for someone who's in public life and wants to be president, you know, I mean, I think it's just another standard, and that was my issue on the whole Bill Clinton Monica Lewinsky thing, you know, back at that, you know, to revisit that. I mean, I would have said, you know what, Mark, you want to have a little fun with your secretary? Hey, Mark, that's your company, it's your business. Whatever. Do what you want to do with your cigars. Not my problem. Not my issue. I don't have anything to say about it. But when you're talking about the President of the United States, and you're talking about the Oval Office, yeah, I got a problem with that. No, I think we have a higher standard for our leaders and our public officials. They are not held to the same basically low standard that I hold myself and you too, Mark. You know, I don't hold you to a high standard.
Well, there are a lot of
comedy shows in Hollywood, for God's sake. You know, so
right. I mean, I do live in Los Angeles. There are a lot of issues with Giuliani's personal life that I still don't think most voters are aware of. That I think will become an issue for him as we draw closer to the primaries. His several marriages, his relationship with his children, this drag stuff. I do think there are enough voters that care about all that stuff that maybe aren't quite aware of it with him yet, and I think it will cause him more problems than it has so far.
Yeah, you're right. Well, you know what? You've blown another perfectly good hour listening to the Freedom Message with Stephen Vincent on bbsradio.com. We're almost out of time. I just say that comes from the Car Talk guys. They always say at the end of the show, you know, you've blown another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. I hope you didn't blow the hour listening to me. I hope that it was worthwhile and even fun and entertaining to a certain extent. Kind of went off on the Giuliani thing, but sometimes I can't help myself. A couple of things that I didn't get a chance to get around to today is the crash, as I have been predicting for weeks and months, of the United States dollar is in full-blown progress right now as we speak. The U.S. dollar today plunged by almost a full percentage point, dipping way down below the bottom shelf, last gasp opportunity for salvation at the 78 level in the U.S. dollar index. This is major, major earth-shaking news in the financial world, and we need to get Dr. Ron Paul on every financial news hour, every financial news report. He is the go-to guy on fiat money, on sound constitutional money, on the debt crisis, on all of this. If he is not immediately the headliner on a lot of news shows that cover financial matters, then we know the fix is in. We know they're icing him out because he is the guy. He is the go-to guy. So folks out there, I would recommend that you organize yourselves to email, telephone call, or whatever you want to do to these news shows and make sure that they know that they need to get Dr. Ron Paul on to talk about the collapse, and I mean collapse, of the United States dollar. Hyperinflation is on the way. It is in progress. Your cost of living is going to go up. The dollars in your pocket, in your savings account, in your 401k or whatever, are becoming worth less and less every day because of the Federal Reserve System, because of the debt financing of our country and our government that is facilitated by the fiat money system of the Federal Reserve, as only Dr. Ron Paul has been pointing out for years and years and years. Major news. We'll be on that again next week. I'm going to get some special guests on to discuss that issue. Other major news, which I touched on yesterday, the U.S. Senate passed a resolution essentially declaring Iran to be an enemy and setting the basis for an attack on Iran. This is some kind of an amendment to a bill, which is the Senate's sense of the Senate on Iran, something that we will bring up again next week. So two major developments. The impending attack on Iran has been essentially codified by the Senate's resolution 1585, amendment number 3017, and the U.S. dollar collapsing past the point of no return. So we will be on that again next week. I'm going to take y'all out with a song, and let's go ahead and say goodbye to Mark. And
thanks for having me. This was fun.
Good. Don't be a stranger. Call back again, and then we'll have our next week. We're going to have the phones integrated with the with everything else, and it'll go more smoothly. So let's go ahead and put us back into the system now, so I can play this file out over the air. I'll pick out a nice Ron Paul song for y'all. Let me see. I get a nice song for you. So I'm going to say goodbye to you now, Mark, so I can do this, and I'll talk to you later.
I am back here on the mic, off the phone and on the mic. And let's go ahead and do one of my favorite Ron Paul songs by Scott Mitchell, the Ron Paul Freedom Train. Feel that train a-rollin'. Here it comes. Get on board. Take that freedom train all the way to its destination.
30 years ago, the founding engineer.
Restoration of the Constitution.
Freedom and America got on board. Bankers, well, they made that train the track. Now we need a leader who can get us back on course. Ron Paul, he's driving that freedom train, so come on board. Well, she may have gone off track, but Ron Paul can bring her back. We're gonna hear that liberty whistle blow once more. Dollar worth its weight in gold will help let freedom ring. And every penny that you make belongs to you.
Thank you, Kelly Florian of Rhinecliff, New York.
And leave the other trains alone.
Thank you, Jocelyn Bayer of Annapolis, Maryland. Freedom Train, David Beltran, Bethel, Connecticut. On board the Freedom Train. Dylan Cartwright, San Antonio, Texas, thank you. $762,279.52. Make your donation now, ronpaul2008.com. We're going to make a million and a quarter.
It's all about freedom, prosperity, and peace. The Constitution was written very precisely to restrain the power and force of government and to protect
www.ronpaulfreedommessage.com. ronpaulfreedommessage.com. Thank you, Mike Ferguson, Grandview, Missouri. Get on that freedom train.
Well, she may have gone off track, but Ron Paul can bring her back.
Let's take this country back. James Karp, Manchester, New Hampshire, thank you. Steve and Vincent, freedom message. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend. I'll talk to you on Monday. Make your contribution. Let's blow this number away. Past a million. 1.5 million. Let's go for it.